Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Randy Susan Myers, whose novel The Widow of Wall Street is now available in paperback from the good folks at Washington Square Press. In this book, we meet Phoebe, who is married to Jake Pierce. He's an ambitious man, and she met him as a teenager in Brooklyn. Jake becomes the golden boy of Wall Street, and he finds clients to put their money into this private club for wealthy investors, and because of Jake's efforts, the couple has more money than they know what to do with. They raise two children, but it all comes crashing down when the world learns that Jake's investment business is nothing more than a Ponzi scheme. Jake's arrested for fraud, sent to prison, and then the world begins asking whether Phoebe was part of the scheme, and who should be equally as culpable as Jake. Randy, we've seen this type of story play out in real life. When we read about people like Bernie Madoff, what is it about these type of stories that cause you to think about the spouse, who's obviously a victim, but could also be conceived as a co-conspirator?
I think part of it is that I worked with criminals for over 10 years, and I was always amazed at how little attention was given to the families of the criminals and how affected they become. I also thought the moment I heard about the Madoff scheme, I thought about her. I thought about Ruth Madoff, and I thought, if she is innocent, what is it like to wake up one morning and realize your entire life is a lie? What is that? How do you recover from that? Can you recover from that? And after doing all of my research, I did believe that she did not know, and that's where the idea came from.
And Ruth Madoff, since you brought it up, she was excoriated in the press and just by her own people that she surrounded herself with, right?
Yes, the only people who... There were people who stuck by her, but they just stayed out of the news. You know, her sister, her sister's husband, close friends from growing up. But people just blamed her, and I found that fantastically interesting. And when I was talking to book clubs about what I was writing, this is before the book came out, they would just go, oh, is that based on Ruth Madoff? She was guilty. She knew. She had to know. And there was so much anger. And I spent a long time really thinking about where that anger came from. And it came to me that women and men are so afraid of being fooled by their spouse, they need to jump to the conclusion that those people are stupid, those people were guilty, it could never happen to me. And in fact, it happens to a lot of us.
Well, it seems like whether it's Phoebe Pierce in the book or Ruth Madoff, there's two extremes as people look at it. They either say the spouse is incredibly stupid or the spouse is complicit. And it seems like there's no in-between for those two polar opposite of ideas. Is that a fair statement?
I think most of the time it is, which has been really interesting for me when I've done book clubs and spoken to people who read the book, how they go, oh, I understand now. And I think there are a couple of things. One is that many of us, if there's one spouse in the family that's handling the money, the other one can make themselves really ignorant of what's going on. I think that's very possible. And people, again, are afraid. They're afraid it could happen to them. The other thing I found fascinating was that people couldn't believe she could be fooled. And I would say, well, goodness, the SEC was fooled. So I guess a wife could be fooled also. And then I think about myself. I mean, I love my husband. He's wonderful. Do I follow him to work every morning? Do I know what he's doing behind his desk? No, of course not.
It seems like Phoebe, it took her a while to get used to this lifestyle because, I mean, they had it all. Greenwich, they had more money than you knew what to do with. She preferred to take the train, but Jake always insisted on sending a car for her, that type of thing. How did she handle being the spouse of a very wealthy and successful man?
Well, I think, like, what can happen to many of us is you have two feelings. One is, yeah, enjoyment of everything that comes with being wealthy. And then there's often guilt, especially if you grew up in a family where there was a moral compass, which Phoebe did, even though her husband did not. And so she does work, which is sort of do-gooder work, which was a really fun thing for me to write about, what she did in the settlement house down in the Lower East Side. And that becomes a whole subplot of the book when I came up with the idea of cooking for English, where she helped immigrants learn English through cooking their native dishes and everybody sharing in them.
Well, she also had this cupcake thing. Can you kind of explain where that came from?
Well, where it came from was just popped out of my imagination. But I really liked the idea of her trying to do, having her own agency and starting her own business. And thus was born the Cupcake Project, a cupcake store. Because around the time that this takes place, there were a lot of women and men starting small businesses that popped and became very large. And so she begins a cupcake business with the women in the cooking for English class.
This book is told from the perspective of both Jake and Phoebe. And Jake, for Jake, what he did seems to be black and white. But for Phoebe, her story is in that gray area of life, that ideas of right and wrong are based more on people's perception. How does that gray area differ when it's viewed by Phoebe versus everyone else, including their children?
I think the people aren't comfortable in gray areas. We tend to think that everything fits into one place or another. And once she finds out he's guilty, she doesn't just walk away immediately. And she's judged for that. And I think it is really hard to walk away from family when you realize you're the last person standing in their life, which is what happens to her. Everybody jumps away from her immediately, and she's kind of left looking around and stays, but with a lot of anger. And that's the grayness I found really interesting. A, love can't just disappear over one moment of learning something. And you have to gradually adjust to the person you thought you loved is not that person. So that was what I really loved exploring.
How much do you think the length of their marriage played into Phoebe's willingness to operate in that gray area? I mean, if this was 2 years into a marriage, the result may have been different, right?
I totally agree. They met when they were teenagers. I think when you're in a marriage of that long standing, your husband or your wife becomes more than your spouse. They are your brother, your sister, your mother, your father. You become each other's caretakers in many, many ways. And to walk away from that is almost like walking, not quite like, but almost like walking away from your child. And it's really tough.
When we read Jake's point of view in the book, he's an unreliable narrator, kind of like a girl on the train type of a narrator, but he's not an alcoholic like it was in that book. How do you go about writing someone who we know is telling the story with a skewed perspective?
Oh, I love it. It's so much. Well, there are a couple of guiding lights that I have. One is that I know, especially, again, from working with criminals for 10 years, that everyone is the star of their own show. That's one thing. And the other thing is that all of us, whether we're criminals or just occasionally hide that we bought a too expensive blouse, which of course I would never do, all of us tell ourselves a story to excuse our own behavior. And so writing Jake became an exaggeration of that. And right as we reach into our depth, so I don't have to have run a Ponzi scheme to understand and to justify justifying his behavior. But I can think back to when I shoplifted a coat from Bloomingdale's a long time ago when I was 16 years old, and think about how I justified that. So you have to reach into yourself, because we all have a little piece of ourselves that's not as attractive as the others.
Is that thought that you had from shoplifting when you were 16 years ago, which was, what, 10 years ago or so?
Not 16 years ago.
When you were 16. I was going to say, that was about 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, 10 years ago, uh-huh.
But how close to the surface is that memory for you, that you can remember that feeling, or did you have to dig deep to find that?
Well, when you are a writer, you have places that you go a lot to explore. And in my family was an awful lot of not that fantastic behavior. We had drug addicts, we had alcoholics, and I was a child of that, and one of the things I turned to was sneaking into my mother's purse every morning and taking money, so it wasn't just the shoplifting. I had an interesting background to pull on for it, and I looked, it was very accessible. I remember that feeling very, very well.
The financial crimes, a Ponzi scheme, when you figure it out, it's very simple, but to figure it out, it's very difficult. And financial crimes are not the sexiest thing to write about, mostly because they are complicated. But how did you make something like this so understandable and exciting for a reader when we're not talking about a murder here?
I also teach writing, and I know that one of the things that one does is you, in order to write on Telegram, you have to really understand it perfectly and then know how to feed it out so that you don't have to know how an engine works in order to teach somebody how to drive. And that's my guiding principle. Mm-hmm. I had to understand everything, and I read all of the court documents. And it was, in fact, a very simple scheme, but you have to know what's supposed to be done. And so I told it as though I was telling it to my granddaughter when I was giving out the actual spine of the crime.
You mentioned you teach writing. You teach at the Grub Street Writers Center in Boston. It's really the literary heart of Boston. How does that program differ from other writers' workshops we see at universities throughout the country?
Well, I haven't been in too many other workshops, but I can tell you that what Grub Street does is really work on positivity rather than breaking people down. And one of the things I do when I teach is I don't stick to just critiquing work. Everything in my master novel workshop also includes craft lessons, because people sometimes think that writers don't need to learn craft the way other professions do, which is kind of crazy. You don't get ask an architect, a budding architect, to walk in with a pen and a paper and just because he has a feel for buildings, draw a building. So there's craft and critique.
The writers that are attracted there, is there a process to get in? Do these people have to be published authors to get in?
There's many, many different levels of classes. The class that I do one-day seminars, it's just open to first come, first serve. My master novel classes, people have to send in some work so I can see what level they're at. But for beginning level classes, all you need to do is sign up.
When you have a person, is writing something that anybody could do, or are there certain people that either have it or don't, and you can tell fairly certainly they're just never going to have it?
You know, I never say that, because I have. When I look at some of my earliest work, I think, oh yeah, I should have been rejected from everything at that point. I think you have a natural bent towards it. I think you have to have either a storytelling gene or writing, or a crafting gene. But I think you can learn how to be the best writer you could be.
When you've talked to book groups about this book, and the hardcover came out last year, do you see that the ideas that this book puts forward put maybe simpler ideas into people's minds about, is my spouse telling me everything about what he or she does? Doesn't necessarily have to be a Ponzi scheme, but just about the things they go about doing in their life.
Oh, in book clubs we have long discussions about whether what they would do if it were them, whether it be an affair or something about money, and because affairs are in the book too, and that's often a breaking point. There's lots of discussion about how much do I know about the money that's going in my household, because women often don't know that much about it. I, in fact, for book clubs, wrote a companion piece with a friend who owns a legitimate wealth management fund on called The Discomfort of Money, about what women should be paying attention to in money, and also from many authors who are friends of mine, how you grow up with ideas about money, what forms you. So in book clubs, there's a lot of intense discussion that goes on.
But I would think that no matter what anybody says about what they would do if it was him or her, you can't know until you're there, right?
I absolutely know that you don't know until it happens. I think of someone like Harvey Weinstein's wife, how she left. She wasn't married to him forever, but they had three small children, I forget which. And she took a moment before she left, because it's like you get tripped up and you don't know right away. nobody knows what they're going to do until it actually comes. And I think a lot of it depends on the kind of crime. I think people are actually sometimes more forgiving with financial crimes than with things that, like infidelity or, God forbid, you know, sex crimes.
Oh. Well, the novel is so great, not just in and of itself, but just of the thoughts that it puts into our minds about how we react as a society and in relationships itself. It's The Widow of Wall Street by Randy Susan Myers. The book is available in paperback now from Washington Square Press. That's part of the Atria family of publishers. Randy, a fantastic offering here. And now, since it's in paperback, nobody has any excuse for not buying it because paperbacks are cheap. So, Randy, great book, and thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you for having me, Brian. You take care.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.